Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Gary Neville is a fucking intense bloke.
I'm absolutely disgusted. It's an absolute disgrace.
He bollocks innocent schoolboys, yells at potatoes, and humiliated his own brother in front of millions of fans. This is his story.
Who the fuck are you?
Welcome back to The Upshot. I am Jack. Zach is here too.
Hello, Jack.
And we are joined once again by Mr. Sammy James.
Hello.
Sammy, occasional producer of the podcast,
or regular producer of the podcast, occasional guest. Sorry, just do that.
Absolute slacker, basically.
Sammy, a bloke I've just met on the street, picked up.
Sometimes pretends to have something to do with this operation.
And he's bringing some broadcaster's insight, as Gary's a famed pundit. Is that
yeah, me and G-Nev are best mates. We met twice. He won't remember either time, but I certainly do. Nice guy, actually.
Yeah. Oh, we were discussing before we started, I think my favourite pundit. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think he's a really good
pundit. In the mainstream media.
He's obviously, he has these like very grumpy rants, but I think he's quite articulate and very, I don't know, he's like very, very strongly opinionated and actually articulates it very well.
I can't think of too many who I would go out of my way to hear what they've got to say about something, but I mean, I'm not going to lie, quite often if Manchester United lose, I will seek out the Gary Neville podcast. It's one of the rites of passage.
Bit of schadenfreude.
I do think that out of all of them there, I mean, him and Carragher changed the game, didn't they? I think no one can deny that.
Yeah, but we are not here to evaluate his analysis of inverted wingbacks. We are here to discuss a story that's got some surprising drama in it, actually, and a lot of very funny moments. Because he can get a little bit Alan Partridge at times, I would say, which comes with the intensity, I guess. Zach, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, so Gary was born in Bury on the outskirts of Manchester. It was a bit of a sporting dynasty, his family. So obviously him and Phil both played football for England. Their sister Tracy played netball for England. Their dad as well, the imaginatively named Neville Neville, was also a pretty good cricketer. There's also a funny story behind how he got the name Neville Neville. So apparently after when he was born, his mum was in hospital and she was there with her sister, so Neville's aunt, and the midwife came in and looked at the little clipboard at the end of the bed and was like, oh, Neville, that's a lovely name for a boy. And his aunt sort of collapsed in laughter, like, Neville, 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 who'd call a child that? And his mum was like, excuse me, I'll call my son whatever I want. And then out of stubbornness called him Neville Neville.
No way.
Fucking watch me. Yeah. Watch me call him Neville Neville. Yeah. Maybe that's where Gary gets some of his intense stubbornness from.
Yeah. Yeah. He does say that that's it's a Neville trait.
Do we know if Neville Neville appreciated being given that name? So good they named him twice.
I don't know, actually. Yeah.
It's one of those things that, like, it would be probably like fun for a day and then probably just get really annoying. Imagine trying to book a restaurant and what's the name there? Neville. And your surname? Neville. No, I know. No, I've got that. It would just get a bit tedious after a while.
Would you rather have a name like that or a name that's like a bit of an innuendo? Like, my sister was working on reception once and a guy came in and he was called Eggy Cock.
What?
Would you rather be Eggy Cock or Neville Neville?
Neville Neville.
Yeah, no question.
You see those ones sometimes, like I always see the meme of Superb.
Yeah,
like
that's
shared
nice.
Around.
I'll take Superb, that'd be great.
It's not a bad name.
Don't want to be Eggy Cock. Sorry for listening, Eggy.
There is, of course, the Aston Martin F1 team principal, Mike Crack.
Is he Mike Crack?
Mike Crack. One of my favourites. And now, because Aston Martin are quite good at F1, old Crofty on F1 commentary has to say his name all the
time.
There
he is, Mike Crack.
Yeah. It always makes me giggle.
Gleaming in the Saudi sun. Mike Crack looking a little ropey this morning.
There must be a good compilation of him saying that somewhere.
We should make that.
Yeah.
You boys can get on it at Hopshot Towers.
So Neville's good at sport, is he?
He's a good cricketer. Their mum as well played football, I think, but not on the same level as the three younger siblings. Apparently, Gary and Phil shared a bedroom until they were 19, or until Gary was 19. So he was already playing in the United first team at this point. So he joined United when he was 11. He was spotted apparently playing for his school team and joined their academy alongside Scholes and Nicky Butt. So they've been playing together since they were 11. And then like Beckham and Giggs and Robbie Savage as well would apparently join them.
Spot the old one out.
would join them at
Keith Gillespie. Yeah. All the greats.
I didn't realise Robbie Savage was part of that.
Yeah.
It didn't quite make the class of 92.
His son is at United, isn't he?
Yeah, Charlie. He's quite good, apparently.
Yeah. And Phil obviously joins them later as well. In 1991, that group all graduate to being like full apprentices at the club. And with that comes the prospect of initiations. So the first team had quite a lot of fun with the new cohort every year. Apparently, Neville says that they made them dance around the dressing room to Barry White and then make love to a poster of Clayton Blackmore, the defender which had been pinned to the massage table.
Was Clayton Blackmore at Man United?
I think so. Yeah. It was like one of the.
When you say made love to, what just sort of?
They pinned a picture of him, like a life size picture of him, to the massage table, and they had to like lie down and make out with it.
Oh, like,
in front of the whole first team.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
this is a bit weird, isn't it?
Well, it's better than shitting in your socks, which is
There's other stuff as well. They'd make them run naked around the training ground, which is sort of your regular initiation fodder. Gary says that they also one time stripped them naked and rubbed them with a wire wool brush and then threw them in the tumble dryer.
Threw them in the tumble dryer. Yeah. How did you get in?
I think it's these big, you know, you go to like laundrette kind of thing, like the
or really shut
ones.
The lid.
I think so.
That's genuinely my like sounds, nightmare.
Yeah,
fucking hell.
Apparently, Ryan Giggs was one of the chief tormentors because he was a year above and he'd graduated to the first team and had become sort of the star boy of the first team. And the first team would get him to like lead the tormenting of the younger players. So Giggs would apparently put a mop on his head and pretend to be a girl, and the apprentices would have to pretend to chat him up in front of the whole first team squad. God.
This was all missing in the class of 92 documentary.
Yeah. We come to the Upshot podcast.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're for. Yeah.
But Gary was always like super, super dedicated. He said that he was obviously training alongside Giggs and Beckham, who you could see from a young age that they were something special, and he just knew that his talent wasn't on the same level, so he resolved to just do everything he could to just train hard and make it, really. Like, he knew that he'd have to work twice as hard as them. He says that at 16, I cast off all my mates from school, never saw them again. So he basically decided the only people he was going to hang out with were footballers.
He literally never speaks to his school friends again.
No.
Just one day disappears.
Yeah.
That's mental. And then they see him on telly.
I know. Like, it must be like, you'd be like, oh yeah, Gary, I went to school with him. He's like, oh really? Like, what's he like? He's like, don't know, really. He just completely cut me off.
I mean, in fairness, smart decision.
Yeah. I mean, it paid off the end. He says that from 16 to 20, he never drinks. He had no girlfriends and he was in bed at 9 o'clock.
That's the price you pay.
That is the price you pay, yeah.
But I mean, I do all those things and I'm just stuck here with you guys.
Yeah, maybe you'll make it into
I drink.
Though once he properly cracks into the United first team, that monk-like existence doesn't last. So 1992, he finally like makes his debut in the first team and has a bit of a run of games, but it's not all plain sailing. He says in his autobiography that he gets dropped for 6 weeks after a lapse involving Kay Sider, which he doesn't really go into any detail in unfortunately. So basically he says that by that point he was playing in the first team and he was traveling with them, and you know, he's expecting to just play the big matches on the weekend. So it's a bit of a surprise when on Monday morning Fergie throws him into a reserve team game, and he's had this big K-cider-fueled weekend and he's really feeling the effects. So he has an absolute nightmare in this game, and Fergie pulls him over at the end. It's like, I think you're getting a bit ahead of yourself, son, and drops him from the team for 6 weeks. So, you know, he does dabble a little bit.
I always wondered who drinks K cider.
Just Gary Neville.
Wouldn't have guessed Gary Neville.
It's quite a 15-year-old thing. And I guess if he's skipped that stage of growing up.
It's sort of one notch up from a big 3-litre plastic bottle of like
White
Ace White Lightning or whatever it's called. Yeah.
There's another story from the 95 Christmas party when Gary drinks a hideous 6 pints of cider and falls asleep on the pavement outside a Chinese takeaway. And he gets woken up by some of his teammates and promptly throws up everywhere. So he's like, oh, guys, you got to put me in a cab. So they get a cab for him, trying to like send him home. And instead, Gary orders the taxi drivers to take him straight to hospital.
He's done the self-analysis.
Yeah. And on the way there, he starts panicking. He's like, oh, fuck, I'm good. I just can't get out. So he gives them a fake name when he arrives. He tells them his name's Simon Brown. And he spends the night in hospital. And the following morning, he calls his teammates to come and collect him. And apparently they arrive and he's in a wheelchair in reception of the hospital.
What?
This is a self-diagnosed hangover.
That's really good. Does he talk about that, what, in his book?
Yeah, he mentioned it in his book, yeah. There's another story from the 96 title celebrations, which are being hosted at this sort of swanky hotel in Manchester. And Gary apparently drinks half a pint of vodka straight from the bottle and then throws up all over the reception, which will happen.
Love it. Just in front of everyone. Yeah. So he's a bit of a like known vomit then.
Is yeah, I think he can't really handle his drink. Fortunately, though, for Gary, his behaviour is totally eclipsed by that of club CEO Martin Edwards, who is caught peering under the doors in the ladies' toilets.
Whoa.
So, yeah, no, it's quite grim. Apparently, he had a bit of a reputation of this. He'd been caught doing it at the training ground as well. And at that party, one of the club officials said that they had to assign him a minder because his visits to the lavatory are becoming more frequent.
But they're like, yeah, just give him a minder. Yeah. What are they meant to do? Just be like, should we get you another drink?
Yeah.
This way, mate.
Yeah. I'm guessing he gets caught eventually.
Well, yes, somehow he doesn't get sacked for this on the spot. Yeah. you would expect.
Yeah, it's the 90s.
But he later resigns in 2004 after a scandalous 10-day period where he's caught sneaking escorts into his hotel room at the Champions League draw in Geneva.
Oh my God.
And then a few days later is caught again peeping under the toilet doors in a private health club.
What, in Geneva?
Not in Geneva, that's back in Manchester.
Fucking hell. Okay, so he's like an animal.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a sex pest. I don't know how he lasted that long.
Another
anyway.
8 years after the Christmas party.
Yeah,
yeah.
So Gary doing half a bottle of Voddy kind of went under the radar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah. Pervy directors aside, though, Gary's doing very well at United and he's picked for the England squad at France 98. And this is obviously a tournament that Glenn Hoddle is manager, who Gary describes as having a great tactical brain but terrible man management skills. He doesn't really endear himself to the squad when he invites along faith healer Eileen Drury, who describes herself as God's instrument, and she's brought along to help the players with injuries apparently, and her methods for that involve placing her hands on players' heads to transmit healing powers.
Fucking
So yeah, it's bollocks, really.
Doesn't she's like getting all the players to sit down in front of her one by one, and when Ray Parler gets in the chair, he just goes, short back in size, please, love.
Yeah. And after that, he never played for England again.
Ray Parler.
Yeah. Hoddle just dropped him from the squad. It's like, you will be respecting Eileen.
Yeah, or Eileen worked her magic.
Yeah,
Gary can't have been up for this.
No, Gary refuses to take part.
Oh, of course he did.
Yeah.
Good.
Hoddle, though, is completely hooked on Eileen. She also convinces him to leave his wife.
Not for her.
No, not
just,
for her.
Just generally.
Yeah.
Is she also the person responsible for Hoddle believing that
disabled people were evil in a past life, because that's what gets him sacked in the end, isn't it?
Yeah, she says that when Hoddle ends up getting sacked from the England job, she does an interview and she's like, she basically says like he's a great guy, like he, you know, he's so kind, he's always thinking about other people, and who these people who are being mean to him now will be punished in a future life.
They'll meet their vengeance in this life or the next.
Oh my god. I remember Hoddle gets a really bad rep from the Beckham documentary, doesn't he? But, and partially, I think it was because he didn't want to take part.
Oh, do you think that was the revenge?
In the Beckham documentary, so he wasn't there to kind of paint his side of the tale. Yeah. But obviously, like, Gary's quite involved in that bit of it as well, because Beckham obviously gets dropped, and Gary's kind of like made himself Beckham's best friend.
Yeah, they are
point.
Best mates, aren't they? Yeah, yeah, yeah. They like roomed together and stuff.
Yeah, they roomed together on England duty and I think at Man United as well during away trips. Yeah. There was quite a cute clip, I think it was a few years later, where Beckham is round at Gary's house cooking dinner, which apparently he did quite often. And in this clip, Gary's eating, I think he's having some pasta or something, and he's like, "Oh, Beck's, can I have some more pasta, please?" And Beckham's like, "No, Gary, come on. If you have more, then you won't eat your main course."
He's doing him like a romantic three-course dinner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's where Brooklyn gets his cookery skills from, I presume.
I think David is quite a keen chef.
He can do a mean bacon sandwich.
Yeah.
He was keen to show that off in the documentary, how good at cooking he was. Or how much he liked it anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Gary can confirm. Also, that tournament, apparently Glenn Hoddle got his staff and physios to walk around the pitch before kickoff to bring positive energy.
Right.
Which didn't quite...
That went well.
Yeah. It didn't quite go.
Got fucking red card.
When Beckham booted Simeone in the arse and got knocked out in the last 16.
Didn't see that one coming, did you, Eileen?
Yeah. Back at United, though, things have never been better. And in 1999, they obviously win the treble. Gary's a real stalwart of that team. They have that famous Champions League final where they score twice in stoppage time to beat Bayern. This is also the height of Beckham's fame, really. And that summer, he gets married to Victoria. And like we said, him and Gary are best mates. And Gary's the best man for his wedding, which means, of course, that he has to organise the stag do, which in the build-up to that, the press dub it the stag do of the century. Unfortunately, it doesn't quite live up to the billing, partly because Beckham doesn't show up. He says that he can't bear to spend a moment away from Victoria in Brooklyn. But that doesn't stop the rest of them having a good time, though. Dwight York especially, who has an all-night bender. He's pictured balancing a tray of drinks on his head. There's also a article where they seem to be slightly insinuating certain things went on. They say, at one point, Dwight seemed to be flagging, but then he suddenly perked up again and became the life and soul of the party. Sure, you can take from that what you will.
Yeah.
What was Gary's organisational skills like? I imagine it would be quite a well-drilled stag, you know, like that pub at 2, we need to be in this pub at 4, and then we've got paintball at 5, you know.
They went to see a gig. I think it was like Blur or someone.
Mm. Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
He's probably quite good best man material, isn't he? He's quite on it.
I mean, he delivers in the wedding speech as well.
Okay.
There's a great joke relating to their Champions League win over Bayern.
We have some distinguished guests present, ladies and gentlemen. David said that the Spice Girls requested that the Bayern Munich team be present today, and David was puzzled at this request and asked why. He said that the Spice Girls replied that they'd love to meet any men that can stay on top for 90 minutes and still come second.
It's a good joke. I think you could probably work on the delivery.
Mm. He's actually just reading it off the sheets.
It's like he printed it off bestmanspeech.com and it's a good joke. Like, but
and it is, someone must have come up with it. That's not because it's a personalised joke.
So, yeah.
But.
So it sounds a bit like a sort of primary school Christmas play where the kids are just like reading it straight off a piece of paper.
I love it. It cuts to Beckham in the clip and you just see him. He's just all in purple. Yeah. I forgot what the outfits were like for that wedding.
Ridiculous.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Gary is doing his duty for another friend in 2003 when Rio Ferdinand misses his drugs test. So do you remember this? He didn't show for a drugs test. His excuse was that he'd gone shopping at Harvey Nichols, which I don't think is a fair defence. And so this big furore happens. And while Rio is awaiting his FA hearing, England decide we're not going to pick him until we've had the hearing, which the players, especially Gary, are incensed by. They think it's totally unfair. He's being judged before he's actually had his proper hearing. But England say, no, this is 2003. They've got a qualifier against Turkey. And England say, no, we're not picking him. And Gary decides to organise for a strike, which is a big deal. I mean, England were, they still needed a few more points to qualify for the Euros, but even if they didn't play this game against Turkey, they probably would have got them. However, there's talk that if they strike, UEFA will kick them out of the tournament. So essentially, they're risking England's participation in Euro 2004. But Gary is adamant, and the tabloids brand him the most hated footballer in the country. They call him Red Nev. As if he's some sort of Marxist for sticking up for his mate. And he has this big showdown row with the new FA chief, Mark Palios. So Palios, Gary feels, is just trying to like grandstand, set a new example that he's like Mr. Whiter than White. And Gary thinks he's being really ridiculous.
It feels like, well, you know, he says the most hated footballer in the country. Were the public not on board, though, with the strike? Because I feel like nowadays, like the pub, the vote of kind of sympathy with the public would always be probably with the footballers in this kind of a situation rather than authorities.
I was wondering this too, because apparently Palios gets loads of shit too. So obviously there's people on both sides, but apparently the tabloids make it out that basically they want to insinuate that Rio is what they would call a druggie. And so they're like, oh, we're not going to get the Euros because this guy is doing, and the tabloids hate drugs, don't they? So I think the papers make out like that. I don't know if the public sentiment's like that. I don't really remember caring that much.
Yeah.
But it was a big drama at the time. I agree. The idea that everyone hates Gary for it. He says he got a lot of shit.
Yeah. Because you feel like nowadays, like always in all of these battles, if it's ever kind of like a footballer versus a club, nearly always like public opinion will side with like the footballers over something.
Yeah, I don't know. But I feel like tabloids especially just hate any kind of like unionization. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a slippery slope from there.
Yeah, they're like, and let that be a lesson to our own employees. It's the real message from Murdoch. Anyway, so Gary has this big showdown with Mark Palios, and at the end of it, he warns him, you, by trying to be Mr. Whiter than White, you are making a rod for your own back. And that proves to be prophetic, because less than a year later, Palios is exposed for sleeping with an assistant at the FA, Faria Alam, who has also been nobbing Sven-Goran Eriksson, famously. So she had an affair, a secret affair with Palios, and then she moves on to Sven, who she like really fancied. She wasn't so complimentary about Palios, but apparently there's this dinner where she sat between Sven and Palios, and at the time she's having this affair with Palios, but Sven doesn't know this. And she said that this is how their affair began. Sven started, she said, I felt a leg start to stroke up and down my leg. It was Sven's. I asked him what he was doing, but he just smirked and said, shh, which is exactly how I imagined Sven Goran Eriksson to flirt. but apparently she really rated that and they had this fling, but Palios loses his job over it, so serves him fucking right. Gary's section in his own book about this is very needless to say, I had the last laugh. However, the strike is called off after Alex Ferguson intervenes. So apparently after the press get really angry about the strike, a lot of the teammates are getting cold feet, but Gary's like, no, we're fucking sticking with this. And then Fergie rings him and is like, look, this isn't worth ruining your career over, back down. And Fergie's a bit like, you're making United look bad, which I found a bit odd, but anyway. So they call off the strike and they play and they draw against Turkey, which is enough to qualify. And Gary actually says it was one of his favourite England results, but, you know, a draw in Turkey wouldn't be my obvious place to go.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't the best, the golden generation. They didn't.
No, disappointing yeah. time.
If that's the highlight.
Should have just got kicked out of the Euros.
I wonder whether that's sort of, because you know the whole sort of debate around the golden generation and why they never lived up to expectations centers on this whole thing that they were divided into different camps and they didn't really bond and they didn't really like each other. I wonder whether had this strike gone ahead, they'd have felt more united.
Yeah.
Is this the point that squad harmony?
Yeah. Gary's argument about why it never worked is that the team was too guaranteed for the big names. And he goes along with the view that England tried to fit too many big players at the whole Lampard, Gerrard, Scholes thing. He's like, we should have had Aaron Lennon on the right giving pace and we should have dropped one of them. He hates the Beckham in central midfield thing. So he thinks it's too kind on the big egos rather than the unity thing.
Mm.
But yeah, maybe if they'd been through some real hell together. If we're calling it hell, getting a summer off.
What do they do? Would they have picketed outside the ground that they were supposed to be at?
Outside,
that would be great.
Lorries, like,
Soho
beeping their
Square.
Horns.
Yeah.
Their yellow vests on the motorway.
Solidarity, comrades.
Yeah. Is Gary Neville the Mick Lynch?
Red Neville. He's sort of going that way. I feel like.
Yeah. Anyway, this moment of leadership does catch the eye of Alex Ferguson, who makes him Man United captain in 2005 when Roy Keane finally fucks off. however, with this increased responsibility comes a bigger profile, and that does make him a target for pranksters. So soon after he's named captain in 2005, some public schoolboys get hold of his phone number and begin prank calling him. And apparently it's absolutely incessant, just like constant phone calls over days. And fortunately, we have a recording of one of the conversations.
Hello? Hi, I'm John. I'm just ringing to apologise. John, who the fuck's got my number? And I'll let you off, mate, because it's the first time your number's come up.
Yeah, I really don't have a clue. Some kid who goes to Millfield School.
Where's the connection back to me?
I literally have no clue whatsoever.
Yo, you better find out, John, because I'm going to fucking give your number to police if you've not found out for me in the next hour.
In the next hour?
I'll ring you in the next hour, John.
Yeah.
Right, and you're going to tell me who started passing my number around your school.
Okay, yeah. I'm being told now, yeah, that Tony Adams' son.
Tony Adams' son? Who's Tony Adams?
You know, you used to play for Arsenal.
Shut up, you fucking dick.
I'm being genuinely serious.
Shut up, you fucking dick.
What?
Amazing.
That's amazing.
Shut up, you fucking dick.
Well, I like that he gets his answer that he wants. He's like, no, shut up, you dick. Yeah. Like,
yeah. So, amazingly, one of the guys who prank called him, Rob Combat, is a listener to our podcast and he got in touch. He actually has his own podcast called The Naughties Podcast and they did an episode called Prankster Number One, really good. And they go into detail about this prank and they actually get John, who's on that recording, on the phone. And apparently they were all literally phoning him. They said for 3 days straight, they were just ringing him being like, is this Gary Neville? And he'd be like, yeah. And they'd be like, twat! And yeah, just really annoying. So it must have been fucking annoying. And apparently other schools, like it was going around all the local schools in Bristol. Some of them were like ringing, pretending to be Alex Ferguson and stuff. Just like, I think he was getting inundated with phone calls. And Gary actually did hand their numbers to the police and their headmaster had to apologise in the local paper.
Was that at Gary's insistence?
Yeah, I presume so. He wanted some sort of justice. But yeah, shout out to Rob Comba, who tried to get in touch with Neville during the pandemic to like explain, but apparently his...
Did he have to apologise in the Bristol local paper or Gary's local paper?
So that
Gary could see it on and see it drop through his letterbox.
I know it's a bit of an inconvenience, but just change your number.
I'd be pretty fucking annoying.
It's a bit annoying, but like if it's gone round, it's...
I saw another story, some Liverpool fans got his number and they were like, on the way to that Champions League final, the one they lost, and they were like giving it large, be like, yeah, yeah. And apparently then when Liverpool lost, the guy checked his phone, he had a voicemail from Gary Neville being like, fuck you! So good. He's quite petty. Yeah.
I remember at my school, a couple of my mates got Phil Thompson's phone number, the old assistant manager for Liverpool under Gerard Houllier.
The guy who Warnock calls Pinocchio.
He had a massive nose, and he was often on Gillette Soccer Saturday. I think it was similar stuff was done to him, just basically call him up and then like little schoolboys just go like, ah, twat.
Yeah, worse to say. Yeah. I'd never be good enough to pretend to be Fergie.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It was definitely, I know that there was nothing sophisticated happening in these prank calls.
It's so good.
I might have incriminated some friends there, sorry.
Yeah. Apologies. Some of his tormentors are a bit more scary than a few Bristolian 14-year-olds. He's always got this big hatred of Liverpool fans, Gary, because he grew up in Bury and he says at his school most people were Liverpool fans and Liverpool were the dominant team back then. So he's always hated them. He said, I can't stand Liverpool. I can't stand the people. I can't stand anything to do with them. And there are a few flare-ups in this. So do you remember in 2006, there's this game that United win, Rio Ferdinand scores a really late header and United win, and Rio and all the other players, they just go straight to the United fans in front of them to celebrate. It's at Old Trafford. But Gary runs the length of the pitch to the away fans and he's like screaming and kissing his badge, just like really gloating in front of them. And he gets the FA get really annoyed about this. They fine him $5,000. And he says, apparently, at the disciplinary hearing, one of the old Blazers asked him, were there any sexual connotations in your pumped fist gestures? Apparently, everyone in the room was like, what?
You've got the wrong end of the stick here,
mate. You're just projecting your sexual enjoyment on it. Just completely out of the blue. To be fair, the Liverpool fans don't like Gary much either. So one time he's driving back from a Liverpool United game and he's stuck in traffic in Salford Docks, and a group of Liverpool fans spot him and all these Reds like surround his car and they're trying to force open the doors, but they're locked. And then they start trying to tip the car over. So they're like rolling it, rocking it side to side. Luckily the lights turn green and Gary speeds off to safety. And then another time, the night before they were due to play Liverpool, he's at home and the police ring. And they say that they've got intelligence that a Merseyside gang want to break into his house and, like, I guess, kidnap him, beat him up. So he has to flee to a hotel for the night.
Oh, my God.
So it could be quite hairy. But, yeah, I mean, I guess he gives as good as he gets.
Yeah, well, and I think it's now with his kind of second profession of being a pundit, I think it's always been quite interesting whenever he covers, like, Liverpool matches of how he now has to stay neutral and balanced and all of that. But you know deep down, like, this man absolutely despises Liverpool.
I love that clip of when Liverpool beat United 7-0 and Gary's, what does he say again? He's like, I thought they played all right. It's like, Jamie Carragher and Graham Souness just have the biggest grin on their face. Like, they just beat you 7-0.
Yeah. You know, when they get him and Carragher to do a composite team of their Man United and Liverpool teams, and he's just like disgusted if it's not a United player in every position. I think he overcompensates a bit, like the Chelsea game recently where he called Chelsea blue billion-pound bottle jobs. I feel like he was overcompensating a bit there.
Yeah, I think he's learned how to kind of work it as well.
It's an awkward problem.
At first I think it was really awkward for him. Now I think he's kind of worked out how to skirt around
Was that not slightly taking away from Liverpool again, though? He was basically saying that Chelsea bottled it. It wasn't an incredible Liverpool performance. It was...
I thought it was more like trying to make something into a more fairy tale than it was. But anyway. So after the police rescue him from some terrifying scousers, Gary's got, you know, quite a lot of faith in the old Bill. So when he's pulled over ahead of the 2006 World Cup and told he's been speeding, he's pretty shocked. And he's even more horrified as he learns that one of the policemen who's pulled him over is a scouser, and they start really nitpicking and trying to do him for loads of offences. So these policemen claim that his car is over its carbon dioxide levels and they threaten to impound his car and take him to the station. But of course, this is in fact a prank led by Rio Ferdinand, who's the mastermind in the studio. Do you remember Rio had this series
where he would prank his England teammates before the World Cup.
Rio's World Cup wind-ups.
Yeah. And when he did it afterwards, he'd always go, "You got murked!"
Which no one has said before or since.
Oh, I used to hear the word, people used murked at my school quite a lot.
Oh, did they? Yeah. Well, after the programme? Or...
No, I think before.
Oh, okay. Well, then Rio just made it completely uncool.
Yeah, I think so. Aren't there like Stormzy's thing is murky, his like label or something. He sometimes goes, murky, key.
Yeah.
And there's a guy called Murkage Dave as well.
Oh, wow. Anyway,
I digress.
This prank, though, isn't it that Ryan Giggs is with him and is in on it, but Gary actually, for his credit, kind of stays quite steadfast?
Well, yeah, so the police, he is quite shocked by the police, but then he gets a bit sort of lippy, and then they basically say to him, if you pose for a photo with us, we'll drop the charges, otherwise you're under arrest.
Yes.
And he refuses to bribe them. So he sticks to his guns.
If he'd not done that, that could have been quite scandalous.
Yeah.
Bribing police. Yeah. He just misses the World Cup. Yeah. You got murked, bro! Yeah. Well, I'm in jail. Should we watch it?
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. Yeah. A couple of words, please. Okay, I'm PC Everts. This is PC Darcy. Can you just confirm your name for me, please? Obviously, we know who you are.
Gary Neville.
Gary Neville?
Oh, I know you're Gary Neville. You're popping around my way, mate.
Any idea why we stopped to have a word?
No.
Okay, it's concerning the speeding offence committed today.
Yeah, it's 12:54 p.m. today, and you were clocked exceeding the speed limit, and that was on the A6144. And the speed limit for there is 60 miles an hour, and we got you at 70. You got anything to say about that?
Just send me the documents through that.
Having a scouse is genius.
Yeah.
There is another of my favourite of Rio's World Cup wind-ups is the Wayne Rooney one. We talked about it on the Wayne Rooney episode, where he gets Rooney to like visit a vet, and then they get him involved in this like operation to save a dog's life, and then they pretend the dog's died, and then they want Wayne to break it to the little boy who owns the dog. It's so good.
It was actually a very, very
entertaining
program.
It's a
really fun program.
They're all on YouTube. I'd recommend the David James one as well. It's great.
Really?
I've seen that. So they go to an art gallery, and David James, I think, thinks of himself as quite like
cultured,
yeah. And he's like looking at this art, and it's shit. It's literally just looks like children's drawings. And the artist is there, and she's like chatting to David James, and David James is like, it's really quite touching. I can see there's a lot of like, I think I could see a lot of. There's a lot of anger in this one, and having this like bullshit conversation with her, and then they make him accidentally knock off a vase or something. It's a sculpture, and it's worth a watch.
That's really good.
You would think though that Rio might cut Gary a bit of slack after he tried to organise a coup
to save his
spot in the Euro squad.
Nope. I rate that for Rio. That was funny. The World Cup wind-ups thing was obviously before the 2006 World Cup, where, I mean, England are quite fancy. That's peak golden generation, but they end up going out in the quarterfinals. And Gary's take on it is that it's just too much of a circus. He really buys into the idea that the whole like wags having parties and wild shopping trips in Baden-Baden is a lot of the problem. His dad, Neville, on the other hand, has an absolute whale of a time. So Neville just sort of like becomes one of the wag group, and he's like out partying with them every night. There's one night where apparently they're in a nightclub and he's just standing on the tables belting out God Save the Queen. He's very much one of the gang. Gary actually becomes so annoyed with it. He says in his book, "The more I saw, the more annoyed I became that my own family were there too." So he's actually like, even his dad's pissing him off at this point, and it obviously doesn't.
He talks about David Beckham knocking on his hotel door one morning with a copy of the Daily Mirror or whatever with his dad on the front. Being like, fuck's sake.
Come
brilliant.
On.
Cheers, Dad. But to be fair, Gary can actually be quite hostile to his own family. So when Phil Neville leaves Man United, he goes to Everton and he's made captain. And on Phil's first game back at Old Trafford, him and Gary are leading the teams out in the tunnel, and Gary just completely blanks him. And there's a good clip of Phil watching back this moment and describing it.
Here we are. We can see you two in the tunnel together.
We don't even talk here.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I was thinking then, he's got to say hello to me, and he never even said hello to me. I thought,
What a knob.
Just the full talking there on like live on Sky Sports as well. It's like, what a knob. But Gary does the same thing to Schmeichel when he comes back with Man City. He just does not, he just blanks him even when they try and say hello.
Dead to him.
It's like his school friends. It's just like, once you're gone from my life, you're dead to me.
Yeah, once you've crossed him. Anyway, Gary eventually retires in 2011. I mean, that is a glittering career. He could not have nailed his dates better to be a Man United player. 1992 to 2011.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple of years either side of that and you're really not
coincidence
getting...
or
I mean, he is a big part of the team. Like, I know that obviously you mentioned earlier, like Bex and Giggs were the kind of superstars, but I mean, he was a very, very solid and good player, and him and Beckham down the right. I think he got a lot of the best out of Beckham because he did a lot of the kind of hard work for Bex, so Bex could concentrate on just whipping in crosses. So,
but also like the attitude of that Man United team, which is like, we don't lose and we will do anything. Like he really embodies that ultra competitive thing, right?
He's got to be one of Fergie's favourite ever players.
Yeah, I'd like to know that. Fergie actually always seems to love the Mavericks though. He seems to have more of a soft spot for your Cantonars and your Rooneys.
Yeah, but he couldn't have done it without his Nevilles.
No, amen. Anyway, given that he's such a great sort of leader and squad player, the natural next move is management. And Gary does a little apprenticeship with none other than Roy Hodgson. He's England's assistant manager, 2012 to 14.
Yeah, he didn't time that so well.
No, that is absolute nadir of English football, isn't it? I mean, that's the World Cup 2014 when England go out in the group.
Yeah.
They can't even beat Costa Rica. What happened to Euro 2012? Do England qualify?
Euro 2012 knocked out by Italy on penalties. But it was a real, like, that was a bit of a disgraceful performance against Italy. Like, we did not deserve even to take
this
penalties.
Is this a sort of like Crouch, Sturridge?
It was Andy Carroll up front.
Andy Carroll scored a belter of a header, Sweden, I think, against Sweden. Yeah,
okay, fair. Anyway, so that England spell's a little bit unhappy, but that does not stop Spanish giants Valencia from appointing him in December 2015. It's a bit of a surprise in Spain. Gary has no management experience. He doesn't speak Spanish. And it's also a bit of a surprise for caretaker manager Phil Neville. So Phil was the assistant under Nuno Espirito Santo at Valencia. Nuno leaves and Phil's made caretaker and obviously thinks he's in with a shot of the main gig. And then Valencia inform him that they've appointed a new manager and it's his brother.
I didn't know that bit.
Yeah, Phil gets made assistant to Gary. Always the bridesmaid.
Do you think that was just an admin error?
We actually went Neville. To be honest, Neville might have done a better job because as everyone knows, it was a disaster. They lose their first nine games. They're thrashed 7-0 by Barcelona and they end up winning just 3 out of 16 matches and Gary is sacked after 3 months.
That 7-0 is brought up so often, isn't it? Like it's so many times and I think it slightly undermined his punditry for a long time because it was like, well, you can talk the talk, but when you did it, you know, you lost 7-0 and were rubbish.
Yeah,
I think he always found that hard to shake off.
I saw Hernan Crespo saying that he was delighted it happened because Gary was always very harsh in punditry. It shows how hard it is.
Have you seen that? There's an incredible picture of Gary Neville on the Valencia team bus surrounded by Valencia fans giving him middle fingers. Incredible photo. We'll put it in the description.
It is a shame that he gives up on management after that. But he then tries his hand in the boardroom instead. He's a co-owner of Salford City with his fellow class of 92 United stars. And Gary serves as the CEO of the club. And, you know, like any young executive, he's full of optimism and new ideas. And he comes out in the press and rails against clubs sacking managers too quickly. He says, how can you build a football team without getting 2 to 3 years? A rule change is required to moderate sackings of managers mid-season. 2 years later, he sacks Salford's rookie manager a week after winning the EFL trophy, and they are on to their fourth manager in 2 years.
Yeah, I feel like this often comes up for Gary, doesn't it? It's like, you know, you're obviously a great pundit, and I think his opinions broadly are mostly good, but occasionally, like, his own actions that he's done in the past slightly kind of scupper him.
As anyone would be, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think when you're as outspoken on so many issues as he is, then people and have had lived your entire life in the spotlight, then there's always going to be stuff people can pick up on you. Nowadays though, he's really smashing it as a pundit. He does a really good job. You wouldn't have guessed that though, seeing his Sky Sports debut when he interviewed Roberto Mancini back in 2011. Very, very awkward interview.
Roberto, Gary Neville, I better never thought you'd be interviewed by me.
No, never. That is okay.
You must be really excited.
Also, what listeners can't see is that Gary's like really awkwardly shuffling on his feet. He looks very nervous.
I think it doesn't help that he's interviewing one of the suavest men in football.
Yeah.
Small beginnings.
Yeah. He does recover though from that and becomes kind of a fixture on both as a pundit and as a commentator. And in 2012, when Chelsea staged their remarkable semi-final victory over Barcelona, he delivers one of his most famous but probably less articulate lines.
This could be the most dramatic story of the season. It's Torres to give Chelsea a place in the Champions League final. The headline has been written.
Unbelievable! Unbelievable!
The goalgasm.
Yeah, the goalgasm.
The nevgasm.
I wish there was more of that. It's a bit like South American commentary where they're like, oh, la, 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 la.
I really liked it and I really don't think it was like a bad thing.
Did anyone?
No. But I think maybe some, I imagine there might have been a few co-commentators that...
Oh, I love that.
You can't imagine Peter Drury doing
it. Yeah, turn their noses up at it. But
it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I like commentators to show a bit of passion and just react like any fan watching the game.
And also it was Torres. It was a mad moment because he was so maligned at Chelsea and then it was wild.
Anyway, as Man United have got progressively shitter, which I have to say as a non-Man United fan is a joyful thing to watch.
Big time.
Gary's got a bit of a reputation for his angry and articulate rants against the club. But alongside the Glazers' cack-handed ownership, Gary has one other mortal enemy, and that is, of course, newfangled potato dishes.
You know, mashed potato, jacket potato, boiled potato, dauphinoise potato, parmesan tear potato, all these things that they do with potatoes, just cut them, fry them, and stop putting truffle and oregano on and all that salt and pepper and shit that they started to do with these things. So for me, I can't eat roast dinners.
I love that the caption here is, why is Gary Neville talking about roast dinners like they just lost 3-1 to Huddersfield? Yeah,
so true. It's the exact same passion and tone.
Pat potatoes, just passing it around the back.
Yeah. Mashed potato, baked dauphinoise potato.
Yeah. He actually revived this topic in an interview with the Financial Times, I think last year. Him and the interviewer were eating at the restaurant of one of his hotels. And, you know, he's sitting down with the Financial Times, so they're probably hoping to grill him a bit about his business empire and, you know, what nuggets of wisdom can he deliver to them after running a lower league football club. But when the interviewer's mushroom tart arrives with a side of mash, Gary can't resist launching into a tirade. So he says, I grew up literally about 50 yards away from a chippy. When someone comes in and puts in front of me parmentier potatoes, boulangerie potatoes, or even roast or new mash, because the problem with mash is, right, they got like 15 types of mash now, like mash with leeking, mash with onion, cheesy mash. Then you've got your mash with too much butter in it. And sometimes it's dry, you know. Honestly, just fry it. A chip, honestly, chips are fine. I absolutely love chips.
Also, doesn't he own the restaurant?
Yeah.
Have a fucking word with the chef, mate.
The restaurant closed down shortly after.
For its chips only policy.
Yeah. Burn it to the ground because they serve mash.
You just need to open a chippy, really. Yeah. The heat, though, is turned on Gary himself when he guest hosts Have I Got News For You. So this was just before the Qatar World Cup. And at the time, Gary was getting quite a lot of stick for going over there and doing punditry work, despite obviously all their like human rights violations and Gary being quite a vocal critic of various political issues. And Ian Hislop gives him an absolute bollocking.
But you know David Beckham, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. How much has he been paid?
I don't know.
You do know.
More than me.
Yeah.
Ian, is it coming home?
What, your reputation? The others have been very gentle with you, Gary, but
thanks.
I mean...
Thanks, Ian.
The elephant in the room is still there. I mean, you're commentating there, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm commentating there.
And what's the defence? Football term.
We're commentating there. Well, you've got a choice, I think, haven't you?
What, going or not going?
Well, my view always has been that you either highlight the issues and challenges in these countries, and speak about them, or you basically don't say anything, you stay back home and don't go. And I've always said we should challenge them.
There's another option. You stay at home and highlight the abuses. You don't have to go and take the Qataris' money. I'm not trying to be tartan, but, I mean, it's just... it's not a very good defence.
You can highlight it.
What, during a match?
Well, highlight it during the commentary.
It's the kick-off here in this appalling country's human rights record, and honestly, I think, oh, someone's kicking a ball, but honestly, the amount of immigrant workers who've died, it's a shocker. Ooh, it's a goal!
Ooh. I forgot how frosty that was.
Yeah, fair play to him for doing it, because he must have known he was going to get that treatment.
Mm. This was because he worked for beIN Sports, right?
Yeah, whoever he... Well, he just commentated at the World Cup, didn't he?
Yeah, but it wasn't just... I think...
Oh, he worked for the Qatari broadcaster.
Yeah, and I might...
I think that's true, yeah.
Because if he'd have just worked for ITV or BBC, I think...
Well, they're kind of saying that anyway, and I do think that point is true. It's like, if everyone cared that much, they would have just refused to go to the World Cup. And if it was boycotted... it would have had far more impact. But well, we all wanted the World Cup.
But the BBC did that. They didn't show the opening ceremony, or they did a different... they showed a few angles about human rights abuses instead of showing the opening ceremony, which their defence was actually they never show the opening ceremony. But anyway, there was some of it. But I think Gary's was particularly because of his work for the Qatari broadcaster as well, which is funded by the by the state.
But I mean, that is hypocritical to take that money.
But again, this is Gary just like constantly like he's a good pundit. He's mostly right on a lot of issues, but he slightly has a tendency to undermine himself.
He makes the, what's that expression you used before? He makes the stick to...
A rod for his own back.
He makes a rod for his own back.
Yeah.
Much like Mark Palios.
In different ways.
Because he doesn't need that. Like, he's got enough commentary gigs. He could have the whole World Cup off. He's not going to go, he's not going to starve. Mm.
True. Yeah, I mean, I agree. He gets caught up for it there.
Yeah. Anyway. It's quite satisfying to see him squirming.
I think fair play for taking it on BBC TV.
But yeah.
He actually does a good job as hosting as well. I enjoyed that episode.
It's
from
quite
a hypocrite.
It's quite a weird dynamic, isn't it? For like, oh, we'd love you to come and host our program. We're going to rip you mercilessly.
But you must have known.
I mean,
that happens to all the hosts. That's kind of part of the game, isn't it? Anyway, judging by his potato rants, Gary must be a pretty intense bloke to be around. So I imagine his family were pretty happy when he discovered the concept of a holiday. Although in typical Gary style, he has his own name for it.
But what you can have is mini retirements during the year. And that's what I've tried to do. I don't do it very well. So for instance, this weekend, I'm going to Spain Friday till Monday morning. That's like a mini retirement. So
that's a weekend.
It's a weekend. It's a mini retirement. It's where I basically can say for 3 days, I'm there and I'm basically taking it, I don't think about work.
This is literally a holiday.
It's a holiday. Yeah.
There's no world where that means anything different to a holiday.
And the world where Stephen Bartlett's calling you out is the epitome of like, that's probably a bit of a weird take, Gary.
Even Steve saying it.
Even he's like,
sounds like business bollocks. Yeah.
The way he's so sincere as he's explaining it as well, it's like as if he's really had a sort of breakthrough.
Yeah. It is a good insight into how fucking intense. He just can't switch off.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably what makes him such a good dragon in the den.
Yeah, that's his latest incarnation.
Have you guys watched any of him in Dragon's Den?
I've watched him a couple of times. I don't think he's bad on there, don't get me wrong. There's an element, though, of like he's been quite keen on like everyone to like jump in and do an investment. Because I think he's like, well, I'm only here like twice or whatever. It does feel a little bit like the meme of when you've got Big Bird from Sesame Street in a really serious meeting with loads of other people where you're just, he's a bit like, it's a bit weird that you're here amongst like genuinely like billionaires and like massively, but you know, he is a successful businessman. I get why he's
there. I mean, he's probably not on a par with like some of the other business gurus, but I would make the same point about Steve Bartlett, but let's not get into that because we'll be here all day.
he seemed to be like, all right on there and stuff, but it was just yeah, you felt like he was like desperate to find someone.
There's no Deborah Meaden.
Yeah.
She's still on it?
No. Yeah.
So would you say it's better or worse with Gary on it?
It made me watch it, actually. Yeah. Like, I don't watch it every week, but I kind of made half an effort to watch the Gary Neville ones, which
I think that's why they got him on, isn't
it?
But also, I'm enjoying this thing of, like, footballers don't have to just be managers or, like, very grumpy pundits you only see once a week. I want them in all these, like, random... Yeah. You know, I want Rio Ferdinand having his own murked series, like Ashton Kutcher style, and I want... Yeah, Gary Neville for
Harry Redknapp on in the jungle.
Yeah, Harry Redknapp in the jungle. But I think push these formats more.
Yeah.
There was talk of Gary Neville becoming a politician at one point, wasn't there? I think he's not going to do it. But he's quite political.
I think, honestly, Gary would try anything.
Yeah. Get him in the Lords. They would put random people in the Lords, don't they?
I think if someone said, Gary, there's an opening, the Pope's giving up next week, would you consider it? I think he'd think about it.
Like, love to see him in that outfit.
Yeah. Body of Christ, blood of Christ. Just drink it. Yeah. Pray. Stop flicking fucking rosary beads.
Church of England.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the full story as of yet. I have a feeling there are going to be a few more chapters in Gary's story. So I look forward. Maybe we'll have a sequel to this pod.
I look forward to Gary's analysis of this episode.
I would love that. I have a feeling he won't be commenting, but I would love that.
Get the touch screens out. He can tell us where we can improve. How we got the tactics wrong.
Yeah. All right. I think that's all we got time for, isn't it? Sammy, thanks a lot for joining us.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Zach.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Gary. And thanks a lot for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.